Welcome to the Sporting Spotlight here on Dublin City FM with me, Bethany Early. For the next half hour, my guest in the Sporting Spotlight is Olympic equestrian rider Camilla Spears. Camilla, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Equestrian events, three-day eventing, something that a lot of people wouldn't be that familiar with. We're going to come back to the actual sport in a few minutes. Tell us first a bit about yourself, where you're from, family, kind of your upbringing.
Yeah, I'm 23 years old from Birtown, Athy, County Kildare. So, Athy born and bred. I've been doing, involved in horses since forever, born into it. So it's in my blood.
So you grew up on horseback, basically.
Yeah.
Like a lot of girls, really, really young, they kind of like the idea of being into horses and that sort of stuff. They're around horses, but very few people actually stick with it. They maybe get distracted by studies or going on to do other bits and pieces. When did you kind of realise that it was more than just a pastime for you?
Well, it's a sport and that, you know, takes a lot of commitment, time, training, and it's, having grown up doing ponies all my life, it sort of became, you know, second nature to me. And as I got older, I got more competitive and set goals for myself and was always trying to make them. And then obviously at the age of 15, I got on my first Irish team. Then I was always going to do it and always wanted to get to the top.
So what age were you when you first took part in competition? Are you talking like as a top? 7-8 years of age or younger?
Yeah, I must have been about 3.
3?
Yeah.
Really, on horseback? Most parents wouldn't allow their children on horseback at that age. Your parents obviously involved in horses.
Yeah. I mean, they grew up doing it all their lives as well. So it was natural for me to, you know, become absolutely entranced by these animals and never afraid of them. And you know, just as I say, it was second nature to me to be around them.
Okay, you have two brothers as well. Were they into the horses at all?
As kids they were. I think more reluctantly they decided to get involved and then decided it wasn't for them. They went to school and went through college and things like that. And my younger brother was very interested in farming, so he went down that route. So it was just me still involved, taking up everyone else's time.
Okay, let's fast forward a couple of years to maybe 15, 16. You've just broken into the Irish international setup. What's going through your head at that point? What's the ambition or what's the plan?
I mean, at the age of 15, as I said, I got on my first Irish team at the Junior European Championships in France, and that kind of gave me a real taste for, you know, international level. And then said to myself, you know, remain on the Irish team through the younger rankings at European level. And then when I was 18, I entered into three-star level, which was competing against other senior riders. And then at 21, I got my first senior team call-up for the World Equestrian Games in America, in Kentucky. So I was still eligible to ride for young rider teams. But obviously I was at a very young age given that opportunity, which was phenomenal. So that really, you know, gave me the initiative to set my sights for the Olympics in 2012.
Equestrian, in terms of Olympic sports, equestrian is slightly different to some other sports in terms of the age profile of the people who participate in it. It's not exactly about your kind of early 20s, retire at 32, 33. It's very much about a longer lifespan on horseback. Is 21 very young to be getting into senior squads?
Yeah, it would be considered very young. But as I say, I had a horse come at the right time, so I was very lucky. But it's a sport whereby the more experience you have, the more you benefit from that. You know, it's not necessarily about your physical attributes, or it doesn't matter what height you are, what weight you are.
Well, I'm sure it doesn't matter what weight you are. If you're carrying like 3 or 4, no, you're not, but if you're carrying 3 or 4 extra stone, it's going to affect the ability to maybe do the show jumping or the eventing or the speed of the horse?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends as well on how a rider carries himself, if they're in balance and things like that. Obviously, it's more difficult for a horse to carry more weight, but if the rider is well balanced and it sometimes doesn't make a difference. You could be weigh nothing but be completely out of sync with the horse.
Yeah, but on the other side, if you're 16, 17 stone, for example, you're going to struggle.
Oh gosh, yes. Yeah, you still have to be an athlete in terms of...
And because people look, I know there's jokes about, a Tommy Tiernan sketch comes to mind about Keane O'Connor at the 2004 Olympics. It's about the horse doing all the work. Is that true? I'm going to presume you're going to say no, but like, talk us through that kind of dynamic between yourself and the horse. How much of a relationship is there?
I mean, it's a very important relationship. You know, to get to that level, the horse doesn't only have to be talented, but it also has to be willing, have good work ethic, be able to handle the enormous pressure, because they do feel it as well. And to obviously jump around enormous technical tracks as well within the time. So it's a really important relationship, and we as riders build up these relationships steadily, and you know, you want to give yourself the best chance possible. So to have that is really important.
You produce your own horses, so you find them as babies basically, and produce them through the whole experience for them as well. Talk us through a bit of kind of how that works in terms of actually identifying the horse, trying to get your hands actually on owning the horse and training it.
You know, it is a long process of producing a horse from baby to top level, and can take up to 5-6 years. Myself and my mum always aim to buy them as unbroken 3-year-olds, primarily because it's more cost effective that way, and secondly, you know, the horse's background, its history, you know, you get to train them to your style of riding. I think it's for me, as I say, you build relationships with them as well. To get on a made horse is always more difficult, you know, to know which buttons to press and getting in sync with them, it takes a bit longer.
So at the moment, how many horses do you have?
Currently in work, I think we've got about 8 to 9, usually all the time, and then real babies who aren't quite in full work yet, but
like
that,
that's a considerable amount of horses, but obviously the cost that goes along with supporting those horses and training and feeding those horses, not just in your own time but actually financially, a cost, it must be astronomical.
Yeah, it's a very expensive sport, and you know, it's a huge backup team behind me, which I'm extremely grateful for. I have some fantastic sponsors. My title sponsors, the Village at Lyons, came on board the team when I was 18 years old, so they've been stood by my side all the way through, and it's their financial support that gets me my training to get to these big top competitions. So, you know, I'm indebted to them a huge amount, and they very kindly invested in a horse for me last November called Low Hill Village at Lyons. So the aim for him was to aim for the next Olympics in Rio. It's literally off one Olympics and you're already on track for the next.
Yeah, but even you're saying it takes 5, 6, 7 years to train a horse. Have you got one eye on 2020 in terms of the horses you'd be producing for that?
Definitely.
It's that far down the line.
Yeah.
Because it becomes a way of life. It's not necessarily a kind of a sport or a pastime. It actually is your whole life revolves around the sport, and particularly where we talked off air about kind of sailors, for example, who get a boat and they spend a substantial amount of money on a boat, or but the boat at night sleep or just is in a shed or wherever it is. It's not living and breathing. You don't have to feed it. If you go on holidays, it's still there when you come back, if you manage to get a holiday in your line of work. It's a huge commitment.
Yeah.
How much does that affect your other strands of your life, be it your studies, your education, your professional, or your relationship with friends? Boyfriends, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean,
I say boyfriend or whatever.
All my boyfriends.
Yeah, all of them.
You know, we eat, sleep and breathe horses. So it is important to find a balance as well, because, you know, I was lucky enough to go through school and make some amazing friends who weren't exactly involved in horses at all. So it's nice to have that side as well. You know, I can come up to Dublin and meet them. You know, my boyfriend is also really supportive of me, knows exactly how committed I am to it, and is a really, really great support. But as well, I decided that last year, you know, I was going to do a diploma in college just as well to balance out my life, whereby I had something else to focus on. It was great to do that and have something else.
So you were full-time in college over the last 12 months since the Olympics?
It was a part-time diploma course in NCI in marketing, advertising and PR. So it was something I was really interested in anyway. And as I say, just sort of balanced out and something else to think about.
Is there an opportunity for you to generate an income from your profession? Because say, an athlete, for example, athletics athletes, they get up, they train, they eat, they sleep. They get up, they train, they eat, they sleep. There's not really much opportunity for them other than maybe the odd personal appearance to generate some form of income. Can you do that with your horses?
You can. I mean, and I do work very hard at doing that, obviously. I have my whole life ahead of me. I have to set myself up, and I am looking into doing this as a full-time business. So it's important for me to sort of try and get new sponsors on board and welcome them with open arms. And there's a huge opportunity for potential sponsors to gain exposure as well. I mean, I'm competing all over the world, internationally, at top level. So there's huge exposure possibilities there. And also I do a lot of training myself. So I do clinics, and other people that want to better themselves in the sport, I'm there for training. So.
And do you just work with people who are maybe at a certain level looking to get to the level you're at, or is it anybody, any beginners who want to come in and just kind of get up on a horse and see how it works? Do you offer that as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know only too well the love anyone has for a sport, and it doesn't matter if you're gunning for a championship or if you simply just want to, you know, improve yourself just riding at home. And it all as with the same sort of mindset and dedication, it just different levels, but it's still at the end of the day a passion. So I can fully understand that and why people want to get involved, and I'm happy to help out and broadcast my knowledge.
Let's talk about your sport for a minute. 3-day eventing, people will be very familiar with, say, the Aga Khan Trophy, which is show jumping. Mm-hmm. They may have heard of dressage, and they've seen a bit maybe of the badminton horse trials and stuff like that, but this is basically all of that all at the one time. You're doing dressage day one, eventing or cross country day two, and show jumping on the third day. So you need to be skilled across a huge range of disciplines. It's not just one specific situation. Do you have a favourite?
I think the cross country is always the most thrilling once you've finished. It's the most nerve-wracking as well. You know, you're sort of putting your life on the line, jumping enormous fences and competing on a two-ton horse, so you don't quite know what's going to happen at any given moment. It's always a real boost and thrill to finish the cross country. And then the dressage and show jumping, it's more technical, so dressage and show jumping, what I would work at most at home, trying to perfect the slightest of movements. I wouldn't necessarily say I have a favourite. I like all three.
How hard is it for you to adapt to those three disciplines across such a short space of time?
I think all riders have an area where they're, which they find easier, they find better, you know. But it's a case of working hard. Some riders are natural, you know, it comes easily to them. And then some aren't, but have to work hard at it.
Which category would you fall into?
I don't know. I'd like to say I'm a natural rider. quite modest. But, you know, I still work very hard at all three disciplines.
But you probably need a little bit of both. You absolutely you need to have a bit of talent and then a lot of hard work.
Definitely.
And that really is it. What advice would you have for someone who's maybe 13, 14, 15, back where you were when you were just about to break into international teams? What advice would you give them if they have maybe 2020 in their sights, or even maybe a chance of sneaking into the Rio squad?
I mean, definitely.
Not that you want the competition.
Oh, no. I think to get more people into the sport in Ireland and to build up a bigger Irish squad would be amazing. So, you know, the training we have here in Ireland is fantastic, and to get involved and to not back down. I mean, I think I was a very, very determined little kid. I sort of said when I was 8 years old, you know, I'm going to an Olympics. And
did you think it would be 2012, or in your head maybe were you looking further down the line?
I think naively, yes, I wanted to. And
looking back now, do you think that was actually crazy for me to even think of getting there?
Yeah.
But yet you've still done it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Because sometimes it's when you haven't got the, I suppose, the fear of failure as a child, when most kids are kind of born without a fear of failure, you're kind of thinking, yeah, I'd be 22 years of age, I can go and do that. But when you actually come out the other side and say, wow, actually, that was huge. How big an event was that for you?
It was huge. Mostly because of the setbacks I had. You know, it's a sport, as I say, that's, you don't know what's going to happen. And I have had a few falls at big events, and, you know, you just have to be resilient. you have to keep coming back to it and not letting them affect your confidence, or, you know, you need to get back up on the horse, as they say, and give another go. And that will then sort of, your resilience will shine through in your results, and you keep coming back, and then all of a sudden you're at the top. It's all there ahead of you.
Okay. We're going to come back to the Olympics in a few minutes, but we're going to take a little bit of a break. I know you've been looking forward to this.
Okay. Oh, no.
It's the Spotlight Sweat, where we ask you a couple of sports questions. Okay. Are you prepared for this?
No.
No, not at all? Not at all. Well, it's a bit late now at this stage.
The game begins in 3, 2, 1.
What events make up a triathlon?
Running, cycling and swimming.
Name the Super Bowl champions from last year.
Passes,
if you don't know it.
Pass.
Okay. Name 2 All-Ireland winning Dublin football captains.
Pass.
Name an Irish snooker world champion.
Pass.
Name 3 Irish rugby players with more than 100 caps. I'll actually name 2 Irish rugby players with more than 300 caps.
Brian O'Driscoll, Paul O'Connell.
No, Brian O'Driscoll is correct. I'll give you 1 point for that. Ronan O'Gara, John Hayes. Cyclist Stephen Roach won a triple crown in 1987. Name 2 of the 3 events.
Pass.
And name 3 Kildare race courses.
The Curragh race course, Punchestown race course and Naas race course.
Yep. Name 1 event that Michael Phelps won a gold medal in the 2012 Olympic Games.
Butterfly.
What distance?
100
meter butterfly is correct. Yeah, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, you didn't get that one. Triathlon, Brian O'Driscoll, Kildare, 4 correct. It's not bad.
Could have done better.
You could have, but at the same
time, I panicked a bit. When I hear something from a sport I'm not familiar with, I panic. As I say, I live in a world full of ponies.
Yeah, well, we got a horseman in there.
We did.
Yeah, a Kildare horse.
I loved that.
Yeah. couldn't do any more for you than that.
Oh God, if I got that wrong, I'd be shamed.
It was the complete random look of the draw as well, to be fair. You just got lucky on that one. The eventing at the Olympics, obviously, arguably the biggest competition you've taken part in. You fell during the second event, the cross country event. What's the positive from the experience? Let's look at the positives that came out of London. Obviously, very disappointing to fall, but how did you leave that? What state of mind were you in when you finished that? Were you looking at it as I was there, it's an experience towards Rio, or was it negative coming out of there?
I definitely, as I say, I spoke about resilience earlier. You have to take the positives from it, and I looked at it and I wouldn't have changed a single thing that I did. The way I rode, you know, my attitude towards the course. I was at an Olympic Games and I gave them my best shot. You know, for such a technical track, every fence, you know, felt brilliant, and that shouldn't really happen. You know, I was having the ride of my life across the country. So, you know, it was just a slight misunderstanding and a slight misreading of a fence tree home. Three fences home from home, that where it happened. So up until that point, I would have said it was foot perfect round. So as I say, I wouldn't have changed anything from it. Obviously, it's really disappointing to have a fall at your Olympics. But then, you know, 22 years old at an Olympic Games was quite an achievement. So I have to take the positives from that as well.
How much does it kind of weigh in your mind that It's 4 years worth of work. It's actually a lifetime's work going into that. Is it hard to pick yourself up after that disappointment?
It is, but you know, if you want to keep going and keep getting results, you have to. There's, you know, you can stay at home and sulk, but sure, that's doing no one any good.
Did you do that for a while?
I didn't actually. I was very upset, but my horse was quite injured after the fall, so he stayed over in England. We were due to travel home about 3 days after, but he was to stay in England for a month or so just to recover. So I immediately on the phone got the rest of my horses home from...
Thought you were going to tell me you got the horse on the phone there for a second.
I wish, no. Oh God, help us.
You can't talk to the horses now.
No, especially not by phone. But I got all my other horses shipped over to England so I could carry on competing them and training them. So, you know, that kind of took my mind off things. And as I say, I eat, sleep and breathe them. So if I was if I was to sulk and sort of feel sorry for myself, it'd be even more of a struggle to get back into it. It's a setback,
but life goes on, really, exactly. Is the kind of the motto. So your event, of course, had a bit of media interest for reasons non-Irish. Of course, it's in Britain, and there was a British royal competing in your particular event, Zara Phillips, mm-hmm. First cousin of Prince William and Prince Harry. So they were at your event watching you compete.
Mm-hmm.
Is that even in your mind at the time, or is it just something that the media play up on?
God, no, it's something the media play up on. I mean,
you weren't thinking Prince Harry, no?
Your boyfriend. No, I mean, you don't think about things like that. As I say, people sort of talking to you say, oh my God, Zara, you know, that must be amazing to see her, but she's just like one of us. She's just a normal competitor trying to do the best she can as well, and she's really good fun. And you know, I think you could have the whole royal family all eyes on you, but you can't let that affect your what you're there to do. You know your job, and it's time to get on with it and not let little things like that affect.
You spoke earlier about your support team. Who is that support team? How big is it? How many people are involved in the whole operation around you at an Olympic Games, or even in the build-up to an Olympic Games?
Well, I mean, at home, we have quite a small yard of only 9 horses. So it's my mum who is a huge, huge support to me, and she's been there the whole way through. And I definitely wouldn't be able to do what I do without her. And I've also got my working pupil, Claire Bryan, who's there. She's here with us for training and also to get more experience. And she's hopefully going to be a real star of the future as well, and really keen and a huge help to us at home. And then our support team goes as far as sponsors. So I'm very, very honoured to have the support from Village at Lions, Antares, which is a saddle company, provide all my tack, Kingsland Equestrian, which supply all my clothing, Comfy Bed Bedding, provide feed, bedding, Treadstep Ireland, which provide all my boots. So, you know, there's a huge long list. Shires, they provide all my horse equipment.
I'm quite interested in the fact that you consider your sponsors as part of your team and not just the people who kind of fund it or give you product or give you supplies that enable you to do things much cheaper or much easier. But they actually are genuinely part of your team, not just your sponsors.
No, they're very much a part of the team. I mean, they've sort of taken the initiative to invest in me, and that's a huge honour. I mean, I'm so grateful and really appreciate that. So, you know, they're just as much a part of it. You know, they're so supportive, text messages, and you know, my horses are kitted out in the best of gear, and you know, I'm very, very privileged to have that. So, you know, to have them on board, I couldn't do it without them.
Okay. Listen, my guest this week has been Camilla Spears, Irish Olympic 3-day eventer. What's the proper description? How would you describe yourself? Is that?
Irish International 3-day event rider.
Okay.
No, I suppose I could say Olympic 3-day event rider.
Yes, exactly. we just upgraded.
There we go.
You.
Yeah. Only a year too late to recognise that.
Yeah, so Irish Olympic competitor. Camilla Spears, thank you very much for coming in and having a chat with us today. It's been great to kind of catch up on the whole world of 3-day eventing. It's something that most of our listeners would not be that familiar with, other than maybe having caught a bit of the Olympics last year or having heard a mention of Zara Phillips. So it's nice to know we have our own Irish competitors in these events as well. Best of luck to you as you prepare to aim for Rio. We do let our guest every week sign out the show with a song of their choice, and you've picked something for us?
I've picked We Are Young by Fun. It's a song which holds a lot of memories for me. I did a documentary in the 2 years leading up to the Olympics called London Calling, which was aired on RTE, and they followed my whole journey. So at the end, the very last episode, they had a collection of all the athletes they followed, best cliffs, and you know, this song was in the background. And
this is your montage song?
Yeah, montage song. So I get goosebumps whenever I hear it, and it just sort of, you know, brings back the great memories that my Olympic journey held.
Okay, well, listen, as I mentioned, my guest this week, Camilla Spears, who competed in three-day eventing at the Olympics in London last year. Thank you very much for coming in. The song she has chosen is Fun. We Are Young. Don't forget, you can listen back to this show on www.sportingspotlight.com. We're also available on iTunes as a podcast. We will chat to you again next week. This is Fun and We Are Young.
Second, I need to get my story straight. My friends are in the bathroom getting higher than the Empire State. My lover, she is waiting for me just across the bar. My seat's been taken by some sunglasses asking about a scar. And I know I gave it to you months ago. I know you're trying to forget. But between the drinks and subtle things, the holes in my apologies, you know, I'm trying hard to take it back. So if by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight.